become reflective about the past and considerate of what we would like the future to be. The past becomes that which we remember and how we weave it into our story. The future becomes what we do about any intentions we have, but those resolutions are a small part of our living as it unfolds in its complexity. Mark Twain said this about New Year's: "Now is the accepted time to make your regular annual good intentions. Next week, you can begin paving hell with them again." In my recent history, I've usually made the resolution to practice being present in the present moment with intention and attention, simply so I won't miss it. Mark Twain also said, "Most of my life, I've spent most of my time being worried about things that never happened." Joe. Whatever your decisions about resolutions, there's a freshness in the idea about beginnings and starting over. New Year's does lend itself to reflection, something we humans do, to the exception of most other beings. I say most because I'm sometimes not sure. This is also Epiphany Sunday in the Christian tradition. Epiphany is an experience of a sudden and striking realization. Generally, the term is used to describe scientific breakthrough, religious or philosophical awarenesses or discoveries, but it can apply to any situation. Epiphany Sunday is the day commemorating the three kings from the Orient who followed the star to Bethlehem on behalf of Herod to check out this newborn named Jesus, who some said was a Messiah, and others said was the King of the Jews. As the story goes, they brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I've often wondered how this poor couple, exiles really, reacted to such gifts. What did they do with those gifts, I wonder? And this is a sermon about a philosophy that is rather simple and one that has been meaningful to me, called wabi-sabi. Someone said, "That sounds sort of like hokey-pokey." I asked the children, when you're tuned in the next 10 minutes or so, see if you can hear in what I say what wabi-sabi means. Wabi-sabi is an ancient and Japanese life stance that grew out of the Taoist and the Zen Buddhist religions. And this is also a sermon that wonders about the epiphany that the wise men might have had that caused them not to return to Herod, but to go another way. Let me start with a story from a church I served in New Jersey. And it's about the chalice at that church. Now, this chalice was made of pewter, and it was about yay big. It was scratched a lot. It was dented in many obvious places. It was obviously old and showed its wear. In my first year there, a man who was a metal artist approached me about designing a new chalice for the congregation. You already know what I'm going to say. He was not a member, but had a fondness for Unitarian Universalism. It was such a generous offer. He was quite well known in the area, and a good idea, I thought. I shared the offer with the board of directors. All but one person were not interested in a new chalice. They did not take the artist up on his kind offer. Now, why was that? It was because those who had been in the church for some time had seen it lit every Sunday, or lit it themselves for many years. It was lighted at their son's wedding. It was glowing at their husband's funeral. They even remembered the time a piece of the pastor's text caught fire and caused quite a stir. from that chalice, that scratched, dented, old pewter chalice. That chalice is an excellent example of wabi-sabi. The phrase itself arises from two words that many think exemplifies the best of Japanese culture. I did not research, that there's nothing in Japan written on wabi-sabi. It's so embedded in the culture. Now, we Americans have grown fond of it, and there are lots of pop culture books on wabi-sabi. Wabi-sabi is a way of perceiving and living that has been handed down through generations. It's not meant to be defined precisely, but they say you know it when you see it. You know it when you hear it, when you are it, when you touch or notice or share something that is wabi-sabi. Wabi-sabi's origins are traced to the Japanese tea ceremony. Tea arrived in Japan from China in the 10th century and is associated with the Zen tradition. Zen monks at first used tea as a stimulant for the harsh meditation sessions and developed elaborate rituals around drinking tea. By the 14th century, four centuries later, tea drinking had spread through secular culture and was ritualistically associated with only the upper class. Large, ostentatious tea rooms existed to showcase wealth and power, especially the wealth and power of the warlords in a time marked by civil unrest and strife. But then along came a Zen monk named Zeno Rikyu, and he established a different, more egalitarian kind of tea ceremony. He served tea in humble bowls that were deliberately not perfectly made, or chosen deliberately because they were misshapen or marred. He made his own utensils or used ones that were simple and not ornate. The room chosen for the new style tea ceremony was small, with only one simple flower as an arrangement. And in order to enter, people had to stoop through a low entryway. This stooping posture was to let the body bring humility to each participant. Rikyu's tea ceremony has become the standard for wabi-sabi. There's a famous Japanese story about Takeno Joho and his disciple Zen no Rikyu that illustrates the role of effort in the creation of wabi-sabi. The younger monk wanted to learn the tea ceremony, and the older monk was willing to teach, but he wanted to get a sense if this younger man could really had a sense of what wabi-sabi is, so he asked him to clean up the yard. Rikyu did, and the older monk, Yoho, watched through the bamboo blinds. He took a lot of effort. Everything was neat and tidy at the end, but something wasn't quite right. Nothing was out of place. Everything manicured perfectly. But on the impulse of clarity about what life really is, Rikyu ran to a cherry tree and shook it so that leaves and blossoms fell randomly on the yard. Upon seeing this, the old monk knew that Rikyu's request to learn the ceremony would happen. He knew he understood that while order and cleanliness are important, imperfection made the picture deeper and more true. So wabi-sabi developed as a response to classism and privilege and a protest against war and warlords. The words wabi and sabi used to be two separate words. Wabi comes from the root wa, which originally had undertones of desolation or extreme sadness. It has over time come to mean simple, unmaterialistic by choice, humble. A wabi bito, is a wabi person, would be one who's free in their heart and chooses a humble, simple existence, detached from the things of the world or the need for materialistic possessions. It is a detachment from the wealth of the material kind and an inclination toward the riches of the heart and the spirit, of awareness and silence, prayer and observation. Sabi, so wabi means simplicity, humility, open-heartedness to the present. Sabi by itself means the bloom of time. It connotes natural progression. Tarnish, rust, wrinkles, weathered wood, the smoothness of stones tumbled for centuries in the sea. Sabi has a melancholic ache to it, conjuring up rural images of faded and wobbly fences, fallow fields and brown sparrows searching for food among the brown stalks of early winter. Sabi is weathered things carrying the beauty of age with dignity and grace. Now, newness can be wabi-sabi too, if it's spare and simple and appreciated. If one were to come to love one's age spots or one's wrinkles as beautiful, this would be very wabi-sabi indeed. You see why we haven't heard much about wabi-sabi in America, where the main drive for political economic life has unfortunately become consuming and profit, planned obsolescence, and new things. Putting the words together, wabi-sabi, it would be a red barn that is slowly collapsing, going back to the earth, not an overly ornate steel and glass high-rise. It is eating a homegrown tomato as opposed to a genetically engineered one. Aged wood, not pergo. It celebrates cracks and crevices and all the other marks that time, weather, and loving leave behind. Think of the rabbit and the velveteen rabbit being shabby and one-eyed and worn because it was loved so much. Very wabi-sabi. It reminds us that we are all transient beings on this planet, that our bodies, as well as the material world around us, are in the process of returning to dust from which we come. Wabi-sabi is frayed edges, rust, and the march of time they represent. The words together, humble, graceful, slowing down to be mindful, to have respectful conversations, harmonious and peaceful dwellings, modest behavior. Imperfection is essential to the concept of wabi-sabi. It is the opposite of look-alike factory line produced objects of no apparent use. It doesn't mean that all factory line products are not wabi-sabi, only that the intention behind the article is wabi-sabi. I read recently that the West is doing its best to turn wabi-sabi into various businesses. Beware if you see a store at the mall called wabi-sabi. It isn't. You can't decide to become wabi-sabi and then go out and buy wabi-sabi things. I could see myself doing that as a younger person. More likely, we would start by getting rid of things and making space for nothing at all in particular. Less taking care of things, more time for caring, experiences, singing, eating, and gathering, and loving. I said on Christmas Eve that I had noticed in the Christmas story this year, for the first time after many years of watching the metaphors in the Christian nativity story, that two groups of people from very different classes came to the manger. The three kings bringing their expensive gifts, and the shepherds bringing only their sense of wonder and hope. both groups of people had epiphanies there in this humble place about something that caused them to recognize that which sustains us beyond lives with too many things or not enough things. Something like humility and love and following stars into new meaning. Something like going another way home. Something like the wabi-sabi notion that people are more important than status and money and kings and things. Jesus surely surprised the disciples when he held a banquet for them the night before he died. It was unusual, as I said with the children, for someone considered a leader to dine with students, but he came eating and drinking more often than not. Even more unusual, when Jesus stooped to wash the feet of the 12, very wabi-sabi. Wabi-sabi whispers that the secret to a satisfying life is to love it as it is, in its changes, while at the same time letting go. Jesus said, "Whoever clings to this life will lose it, and whoever loses this life will save it." And this from Lao Tzu: "If you realize that you have enough, you are truly rich." I can't remember if I told my Pete Seeger sock story here before, but it's a very wabi-sabi story, so I'll tell you. I was at a conference, a social justice conference in Washington, D.C. years ago, and sitting and listening to some music, and someone sat down beside me and crossed their legs, and I noticed in this sock an L-shaped repair of an L-shaped rip. And I didn't look to see who was wearing the socks. I only said, "I'm so impressed that you sew your socks when they rip." Turned out it was Pete Seeger. And he told me that they found, when they were on the Hudson on his beautiful boat, there was a box floating in the water, and they fished it in, and it was a lot of red flannel material, from which his wife made him 35 red flannel shirts, which he had one of on that day when I met him. His way of saying, "I did not sew these socks. My wife sewed these socks." However, they had a commitment to wabi-sabi in their resource management, in their personal lives. Winter seeks our attention in realizing the nature of life. In its cycle of death and dark lies the season of blooming life. The dilapidated barn whose sloping demise is so very lovely murmurs to our soul that life is beautiful and that it is fleeting and that it is natural for things to change and oh, so imperfectly exquisite. This is the spiritual path of wabi-sabi. And Jesus supping with his friends and washing their feet and saying, "Remember me." And the kings going home another way because their epiphany at the crib side of love and humbleness brought them to an understanding that Herod sought to keep the riches for a few and the power over others that he had as the rule of his governing, even unto the death of all those who spoke other truths. All are welcome at the table of acceptance and humility, each sacred to life. Life as humans that are spent less in caring for things and worrying about money and more in opening our hearts wide for all life and letting them break sometimes, kind of a sad sweetness. It is about breaking in our habits and noticing the stunning beauty of transience. Wabi-sabi. "Ring the bells," said Leonard Cohen, "that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. Here's to the light in this new year, and all the beautiful changing places we find it, including within ourselves. Amen. As you're able, rise, and let us all rise in spirit for the singing of Wake Now My Senses. To epiphanies, great and small, whenever they occur. A blessing on all wise women and men, east and west. Here's to the stargazers and pilgrims everywhere, who are still foolish enough and brave enough to follow those stars, who travel by night, who bestow their uncommon gifts on all of us. Blessed be in this new year.